You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ursula Le Guin has won a National Book Award, 5 Hugo and Nebula Awards, the Kafka Award, among other honors, and she was here back in April to discuss her latest novel, Lavinia. In the Aeneid, Virgil's epic poem, Lavinia is mentioned only a few times as the blushing princess destined to marry Aeneas the hero. Although she doesn't speak a word in the Aeneid, she gets to tell her story in Ursula K. Le Guin's latest novel called Lavinia. Listeners told us how much they enjoyed our conversation, and we thought that we would re-air it for you again on this 4th of July weekend. I started off by noting that many of her previous novels have been set in the future, and I asked her what brought her to the ancient world.
Reading Virgil and falling in love with it and getting, you know, really involved. Well, I was reading it in Latin, which means I was reading it very, very slowly. Like 8 or 10 lines a day.
So you'd studied Latin in school.
Yeah, and then kind of went back to it in my old age, you know, and so I'm plowing through the Aeneid. But that's a great way to read a great poem, word for word, word by word. You know. And I got intrigued with this girl who doesn't speak.
But reading a poem in its original language is different than even reading a translation of a novel, isn't it? I mean, the original as opposed to a translation. Because the sound of the words, but did the sound of the words matter very much to you?
Yeah.
Do people even speak Latin correctly these days?
Well, I don't speak it correctly, but Virgil is as musical as a poet can be, and it comes through. No matter how you murder his language, it still is way better in Latin than it is in any other language.
So did you see this as writing historical fiction? I mean, do you think in genre terms? Because you're usually described as a science fiction or fantasy.
Genre happens to me. It is applied from outside. I do my novel, and then they tell me what it is. And, you know, this really isn't historical fiction because this is prehistory. Mm-hmm. This is the Bronze Age.
So there really is very little research you can do on this other than Virgil.
Right. And I could read up on 8th century B.C. Italy. And kind of find out that it was pretty much like the rest of Bronze Age Europe, you know, sort of figure out how the people lived and what the religion might have been like. That was very important to the book.
Well, this is Rome before it was Rome.
There wasn't any Rome. It didn't even have that name yet.
You call it Latinus or Latinus?
The area is Latium, where the Latins lived, mm-hmm. who spoke Latin. They were already speaking some kind of Latin at that point. And they are, of course, they're the guys who were going to become the Romans when they found the city. But there wasn't a city there. There was a small village occupied by a Greek exile.
And you depict this world as very wild. There's a lot of mud and woods.
Yeah.
Farming. People live very close to the earth. You wanted to make the point that these people were a lot less civilized than what we usually imagine Romans to be.
Right. I wanted to get clear away from the empire. Because when you say Rome, everybody thinks the empire and all those guys with gold and silver and big helmets and, you know, and rather unpleasant people poisoning each other and so on. This is so far back behind that. This is, after all, the period of the Trojan War. But they're still Italians. That's what I figured. These are not Greeks. These are Italians. They're different.
Well, Virgil was influenced by Homer, but you write that your imagination is at home in a Roman household as it can't be in a Greek household.
That's true, partly because Roman women had much better standing. They weren't the sort of chattels they were in Greece. And it just, in Greece, I'm always kind of uncomfortable. And in Rome, I've always felt comfortable. I always figured, these are Italians. I've met Italians. I know Italians, you know.
Well, Helen of Troy is a larger-than-life figure. And the Greeks, of course, made their female gods quite powerful.
Well, and the,
they're the much more interesting ones, aren't they?
The characters in the woman characters in the plays are terrific. Yeah,
Medea.
Yeah, exactly. There's a contradiction there of the social standing of women and the actual sort of psychological standing of women in Greece. But in Rome, I didn't have to worry so much about the social standing. Because, you know, a woman could own property. She could run a farm. She could be a human being in Rome. And that I'm just easier with that.
Well, another genre that people put you into is they've called you a feminist author. Do you think of yourself that way?
Well, I'm a feminist, so therefore it gets into my writing. But I don't write feminist books that are treatises or anything like that.
Well, do you see Lavinia's story as a feminist tale?
Not particularly. Except that it is seen from the point of view of a woman, which in itself kind of makes a thing feminist. That's really all there is to it.
Why did you decide to change the color of her hair?
She's a South Italian. I couldn't see how she could be blonde and blue-eyed. That was fashionable for Virgil's time, as it is now. But it was just too unrealistic. That is the only thing I changed, though, because I was not in there to set Virgil straight. You know, I liked what he did. I just wanted to take this part of the story farther.
Were you influenced by the musicality of the language? I mean, this is not written as an epic poem.
No, this is a novel. Well, you know, the way I think of it, I can't translate Virgil. I'm not sure anybody can. I mean, of course, there's some fine translations, but the music does not come through. But I could translate Virgil, part of the Aeneid, into a novel, into a different form, as well as a different language. So in a way, this is the first part of my book is it kind of a version of the last six books of the Aeneid. Then I take off because Lavinia survives Aeneas, her husband.
And it's a complicated story, which I'll get to in just a moment. Ursula K. Le Guin's latest book is Lavinia, a novel. It is published by Harcourt. Lavinia is a character with a destiny already determined, not just by Virgil, but by the gods. And she doesn't allow her fate to affect some of her decisions.
Well...
Well, for example, she knows that if she marries Aeneas, there's going to be a war.
Yeah, but she also knows...
And that he's going to live all that long.
Yeah, but she knows if she marries him, she doesn't have to marry Turnus, this marriage that her mother's trying to force her into in a rather unnatural and frightening way. She also has seen Aeneas, heard about him... through the poet Virgil, who comes to talk to her as a ghost. She's intrigued. In other words, she's 18 years old. She's falling in love with this guy. He's a hero, the way kids fall in love with heroes. What she's doing is sort of Taoistic. She is embracing her destiny. She's doing what she has to do wholeheartedly, which actually is what Aeneas does, except for once when he falls in love with Dido, which is... but that's because the gods are interfering with him. There are no gods in my book, you may have noticed.
Yeah, in the Aeneid, the gods are major characters. Yeah. They make many decisions, as they do in Homer.
They're incredibly unpleasant.
They are referred to here, but they are not characters.
Aeneas knows about them to some extent. And Virgil, of course, knows about them, who is also a character in the novel. This sounds complicated, but...
Lavinia refers to Virgil as someone she loves and also refers to him as the author of all my being. So
he is. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
She knows that she's kind of an invented character on some
she
level.
She sort of knows that, but she doesn't talk about it very much. But I figured she had to know that as my central character, my voice character in the book. She had to know who she was.
Oracles appear in this novel,
yeah,
as well as in others that you've written. Why are you so interested in magical messages and oracles?
Well, these people were. they were driven, moved by what the Greek called gods and what the early Romans, I think, called more powers, local powers and so on.
So that was more of an animistic kind of approach to the gods? In other words, the lightning was a god and the...
They weren't gods. They were just powers. Mm-hmm. They were great powers that you needed to be on the right side of, and you tried to placate.
So you did sacrifices.
You did sacrifices, and you tried to keep in balance with nature. To tell you the truth, it sounds to me quite a lot like the little I know about Native American religion. It's just you try not to do things wrong. You try to keep in balance, in on the right side of things, and not to sort of break the order of nature. But you don't have to pray to specific gods, and you don't have to believe in a big super god or anything like that. That simply doesn't come into it.
So when did that change? When they came into contact with the Greeks and adopted the
largely,
Greek gods?
Yeah, because the Greek gods are very powerful, and they had these wonderful stories attached to them. And these Roman powers had no stories. They just had places.
It is interesting that the Romans took all the Greek gods and then changed their names.
They used mostly these names of sort of local powers that they had, like Vulcan instead of Hephaestus. Vulcan is the volcano.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, probably Etna. So they were using local place names largely.
And then you get Jupiter instead of Zeus, and you get
Jupiter Juno is sky father, is godfather, the Deus and Pater. That's Jupiter. So yeah, obviously if he's the lightning god, the thunder god, the big guy up there, he's the same as Zeus.
What role do the oracles play in the story of Lavinia?
Well, her family has this sort of place they go to hear their oracles, and she actually doesn't hear them, but her father does. And the oracle clearly tells him that your daughter has to marry this foreigner, and there will be trouble, but that's how it has to be. And he accepts that because that's how it is.
In Greece, the oracles, at least at Delphi, were women.
They spoke through women.
Mm.
Yeah. It was Apollo's oracle, but it was a priestess that spoke it. I don't think we know exactly how the early Italians got their oracles.
How much did the archaeologists actually know about this time?
They know a lot, but most of it is from artifact. So we have to guess about things like, did you just go and listen to the trees, or what did you do?
Lavinia's hair catches fire at one point.
Yeah, that's, of course, in the Aeneid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
without burning her.
So what you did is you took the story of the Aeneid, and this has been done by other people as well in the past. You extrapolate, but you still stuck pretty closely to what
Virgil
did. I
stuck as close as I could
did.
To the events, yes.
Do you think that the Aeneid is pure myth, or do you think that, as in so many of those ancient books, there's a certain amount of history? Obviously, the Iliad turns out to be a lot more history than people assumed in the past.
I think, this may bring scholars down upon me like hornets, but I think Virgil mostly made it up. I think the Aeneid is much more a one-man invention. Homer, after all, is a bunch of traditions coming together.
And Virgil is inspired. He's a modern writer inspired by something.
Who wants Rome to have its myth the way Greece did. And so he said, I'm going to do it. And it's kind of more, and that's why it hangs together so beautifully, too.
And perhaps that's one of the reasons you feel closer to it, because this is the equivalent of writing a novel, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's a Roman type of novel.
Now, you go back and forth. You have written a lot of books for young adults as well. What's your next book going to be?
I don't know. I'm at this point verging on 80. I seem to be mostly writing poetry, which makes me happy. So.
Well, you could always write an epic poem inspired by Virgil.
I think one should start that along in one's 30s or 40s, probably.
Lavinia is Ursula K. Le Guin's latest novel. It is published by Harcourt. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Larry.